Early ball into the box. The header on goal. Score! Remy Cabral! They'll pull back out. They'll go with the straight line from the penalty spot down. Here's the corner kick played into the area. Out comes Lopez. Gets his fists on the ball. The shot to goal. They score! Runs onto this one. He's got Judd here looking for the third goal, and there it is.
Welcome to Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Vlog, a member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network. First of all, I'm Aaron here with John and Peter, and we here at Roots Blog would like to issue a congratulations to all Roots dogs, Roots cats, Roots birds, and other Roots pets for making it through July the 4th, and in some cases also July the 3rd and July the 5th. We're all very proud of you.
Everybody, send us your stuff. We got to get the page going. You know that we got to get it going. Send us your Roots dogs. Send us your Roots cats, your Roots birds, whatever Roots pets you got. We got to get it on the page.
We will not be changing the name of the page. It will remain Roots Dogs. So you can send us your cats and birds. They are welcome.
It's sort of the royal dog.
You can send pictures of your children. If you want, if you fill out our disclaimer that you told us to post them on the website, they will still be labeled Roots Dogs.
Things that are less good include the Oakland Roots' last performance against LA Galaxy 2, a 3-1 loss that saw a lot of missed chances in the first half, marred by an inability to convert them, an injury to Mikael Janssen of unknown severity, and then let's call it a somewhat cheap second yellow for Charlie Dennis that meant that Oakland goes into the second half down two of its better players, and it got ugly. It got ugly pretty fast. Oakland decided to stay, I think, in kind of an attacking mindset, and it came back to bite them in the ass. I don't know, John, is that basically how you read how things went in the second half?
Pretty much, yeah. You pretty much hit it nail on the head. It was a first half that seemed productive. I want to compare it to a little mix of the Colorado and New Mexico game, to where Roots were looking very productive in the first half, getting shots on target, getting looks, but not finishing. I wrote down they had 8 shots, 5 on target. They had a big opportunity that was missed. And like you mentioned in the buildup there, Janssen's injury around the 35th minute, I think it was, seemed to really change the game. And then obviously with Dennis's 2 fouls there, which were minutes apart, I think one was in the 41st and then the other right before halftime, ticky-tack calls. I think the first one was fair, a pull from the shoulder. The second one, it was definitely a foul, but you know, there's been so many similar opportunities with the Roots where a guy on a yellow commits a foul and they don't get it because, oh, they don't want to put the other team down. I don't know. That ref was super happy with his whistle. I'm not sure how many yellow cards were in that game. It felt like there was a lot, though. But as you mentioned, you know, Roots tried to push forward, didn't work. LA scores 6 minutes after halftime, and the wheels just started coming off.
To answer your question, there were 7 yellows handed out in that match.
Woo!
And I think I agree. That was pretty cheap for a second yellow. You gotta really earn it to be sent off. I don't think there's any shame in saying that the second yellow offense has to be a little bit worse than the first. But to this ref's credit, he was fairly consistent. Like he was calling the game pretty tight.
And I mean, it was like
consistency is really all you can ask for, right?
Yeah, it was like Dennis. It seemed like he kind of panicked after he lost the ball there, got a bad touch on the pass, ball got away from him, and then at the corner comes who was it, Cabral. And he kind of lunges at it. So, ugly way to go off is what it is.
a second yellow in the first half, especially.
Especially, yeah.
You know, it's like one thing when you're at the 65-minute mark, the ref should hand out yellow cards where yellow cards are deserved there. But, like, you're tanking the game if you give a second yellow.
I'll be honest. I was not too upset about the decision to continue to go for it at this point in the season. I think 1 point versus zero is pretty irrelevant. You know, it's all about getting the 3 points, so you might as well try. So for that reason, I wasn't too asked about the fact that they kept going for it. But it was sort of frustrating having watched Oakland sort of capitulate in the second half to then the next night turn on your television and watch San Diego, who was down a man, manage to get a winning goal against Colorado Springs. I mean, that was pretty frustrating to watch. And it was a really well-worked goal, too. It's sort of the thing. You're like, why? Well, this is exactly what we were trying to do. Why did it not happen?
Well, that segues well into my silver linings, if I can jump in the agenda to my silver linings, which are that the results for the Roots went basically as well as they could have in every way except that Galaxy picked up 3 points, which is the downside to playing to win, is that the Roots want 3 points, but they also really wanted Galaxy to get one, if not zero.
If not zero, yeah. That's a fair point.
El Paso... drew Atlanta United, who, as we know, suck. Although Tristan Traeger has 6 goals in 3 games, maybe more than that, at least 5.
You gotta wonder if Atlanta United one are gonna want some of his services at some point.
As long, please leave him down to keep taking points off of Western Conference teams. New Mexico drew Monterey Bay. Las Vegas lost to Detroit, who are, you know, as much as we like seeing Detroit suffer, at this point we need dropped points from the West. Orange County drew Phoenix, which is really, you know, keep both of those teams down below the Roots if possible. SAC lost to Colorado Springs in pretty rough fashion. The only result that didn't go the way the Roots wanted, as Aaron said, is San Diego beat Colorado Springs. But the way the Roots are struggling right now, you know, they're not catching third either.
Yeah,
you know,
San Diego might be out of touch at this point.
Yeah, we already pretty much knew. We want differentiation. We want the top teams to keep getting points, taking them off the mid-level teams that the Roots are competing with. And I think it's probably time to put San Diego in that top bracket now. And at the moment, New Mexico is drawing Rio Grande Valley, which is, again, exactly the result we want there. Both teams dropping points. They're just
that'll definitely be a timely update by the time we release this podcast.
Now that you said that, let's see what happens.
They can't both win, and we do need both of them to drop points.
You know, the one thing that I think sort of did frustrate me about the second half is the first goal in particular. It was that, you know, they set up in sort of this 5-3-1 shape, down a man. And they said, we're going to concede the wings, but you're not getting anything in the middle of the pitch. And the first goal happens because a Galaxy 2 player is wide open on the wings. It's the space they were conceding. And we didn't mark a runner in the box. Like, that's the thing that has to happen. And it's sort of frustrating because it seems to be the kind of thing that continues to happen. And, you know, you would think that you're turning up the defensive intensity a little bit down a guy, and maybe you're going to not make that mistake, and then it happened anyway. But
I'll be honest, I didn't watch the game live, and I mean, why would I watch the highlights of that game?
There's no reason to watch the highlights. not at this point. There's no reason to watch the highlights. So Peter gave us one sort of silver lining. I mean, the thing about this result, as we said, like, you just sort of, whatever. It's over. We didn't get 1 point, but 1 point didn't matter. It needed to be 3, and that was probably not happening once you go down a man with a full half to play against. They're a developmental side, but that means they've got some good prospects. And I think they showed that there's some talent on that squad in the second half. And I said multiple times ahead of this game, I didn't think Oakland was going to win it, and I didn't think that was going to be a problem in the playoff hunt. So I'm going to continue to say that. John, give us another silver lining from this past week.
Well, I think we could draw towards those first half opportunities, at least. You know, Rito came back, looked effective as he did pre-injury, had a shot on target in the 20th minute, forced a diving save. Janssen looked great. We hope that it's not an extensive injury. I remember watching the game and he hopped off the bench to get a ball. And I was like, oh, maybe he's not that hurt. So
yeah, obviously we don't know anything about the injury, but he came off in a way that suggests that they knew going in this was a possibility, right? Mm-hmm. And if they knew it was a possibility and were willing to risk him, it suggests that he's not that seriously injured, right? This is probably not like a Kevin Durant situation where his knee's all torn up and we need him to go because there's no other way we're winning this game, like because it's the NBA final. And he probably was close to healthy, close to 100%, and they just wanted to see if he could go. Fingers crossed, you know, knock on wood, whatever you do at this point to, you know, make sure that's what happened.
I obviously, like, you know, injuries can get exacerbated, can get worse. It could become clear over time what's actually going wrong. But I will say, I mean, I think if we don't hear anything soon, I think it means they think he's coming back. Because if he was going to miss 6 weeks, I think Venezia would call him back and have him seen by the doctors of the club who own him, right? Who own his contract.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially if we see him on the bench, but he doesn't come in the next game, I think that's also a sign that they think it's going to be a couple weeks and not a couple months.
I see another silver lining. I think we're still far away from, as you mentioned, writing off this season, but the prospects for 5-1-0, they look very good. Javi Ruiz had a nice play. He is a Santa Clara University grad, helped them win a conference championship in 2021 before he came to Project 5-0, helped them reach the NCAA tournament in round of 32. So he's got some draw to him. And also Eric Yamamoto, executive for the Roots, also has a job with Santa Clara's men's soccer team, or at least he used to. Javi Mariona, he's killing it. I mean, what can we say about him? I mean, two goals with El Salvador U-20. I loved his interview. He reminds me, you know, I interview a lot of young guys, and he reminds me of those young cats who not really sure what to do in an interview. The guy asks him a question, and he looks straight to the camera to respond. I thought that was
a young cat. Are you a 1950s era gangster?
Anyways, he also had a beautiful free kick on Friday. I mean, the boy looks ready. He's got it. So we'll see what happens with him. I definitely think we'll see him next year, maybe as a starter. We'll see. Too early to tell. Javi Bedoya, we're naming all the Javis. He was the one that got signed
You're out there named Javier. Perhaps you should contact the Oakland Roots. There might be a spot for you on the 5-1.
Spot. We've heard nothing but praise about him. Not sure how far along he is. He's a smaller guy, so I know he could probably do some building physically, but we've heard he's got footwork, very technical ability. So we'll see. But the Roots have some options to choose from, especially for 2023.
Well, like you said, not yet time to write off this season, but it is nice that there is a real future for the organization as a whole. It does look like they are set up for long-term success no matter what happens here. Bringing you back short-term, next match, Sacramento Republic, John's favorite opponent. You might recall that Oakland and Sacramento, you'll be surprised about this, I'm sure. Oakland and Sacramento played to a 1-1 draw earlier this season in front of about 4,300 people at Laney College football field. And you might also be surprised to learn that Oakland's one goal in that match was an equalizing penalty for Motar Carlson in the 81st minute. So pretty classic Oakland match right there. That's like
the season. Was the penalty call legit?
Zero idea.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Zero. Of course it was legit.
Oh, yeah. John thinks it was.
Of course it was legit. Sacramento is kind of in some fine form right now. They made a mid-season switch from a back four to a back three, and it seems to have paid off for them. They started the season with that back four formation. They went 3-1-2 in their first six matches, but they were pretty much even on goals scored and goals allowed. So they switched, and I'm not entirely sure if that's why they made the switch. There might have been an injury, and I just missed it. But they switched to a back three. They spent a lot more time out of possession. But prior to their last game against Colorado Springs Switchbacks, which Peter just mentioned, they were 5-2-1 in that formation with 9 goals for and 3 against in those 8 games, which is not a great offensive return, but my God, it's really good defensively. It'd be great if Oakland could come up with that kind of defensive record. Peter did mention that they got beaten up on the scoreboard by Colorado Springs. It was 3-0. But in fact, the expected goals was basically even. According to 538, it was 0.6 to 0.6. And according to Opta, it was 0.78 to 0.72 in Sacramento's favor. So as bad as that was, and I think we can also relate to this, that was a 3-0 loss to Colorado Springs that doesn't exactly represent what happened on the football field.
I'm willing to buy those XG numbers, but Sacramento has 19 goals on the season, and that result is consistent, you know, 0.7 or whatever, is consistent with them not scoring, right? That's not particularly bad luck that they didn't score.
It's not bad luck that they didn't score. And I'll say I only watched part of this game, but I think that first goal was coming because Sacramento was having a heck of a time trying to press Colorado Springs back line and was letting a lot of stuff through. And that ball came from a buildup that started out of the Colorado Springs back. I think they actually had possession either in the 18-yard box or the goalie had it. And they just sort of ripped Sacramento apart. The other two goals were sort of long-range golazos, I think, from Haji Berry. So that's why the XG numbers are so low for Colorado Springs. But what they did after that first goal was they stopped trying to press high, and instead they clogged the midfield. And they actually, I thought, did a pretty good job of dominating the Colorado Springs midfield, which does not inspire a whole lot of confidence in me personally, because that is an area that we often have trouble with here in Oakland, getting dominated in the midfield. And in fact, I recall that happening last time Oakland played Sacramento. I've watched a few, to your point about Sacramento not scoring, I've watched a few of their matches, not the whole matches, but bits and pieces just to sort of prepare for this, know what's coming on Saturday. And I'm honestly a little bit shocked they don't score more. Like, they do a lot of stuff in the middle of the park that I wish Oakland were doing, but they are not putting the ball in the back of the net.
No, they have their top scorers are Douglas Martinez,
I think,
Malik Foster, who each have 3 goals. And then Rodrigo Lopez has 2 goals and 2 assists. They have a couple other guys contributing 2 goals, but they don't appear to have a focal point of the attack, or at least not one that's functioning.
Yeah, I think that Douglas Martinez regularly plays up top. Now, obviously, now that I've said that, he's not going to do that in this match, but I think he's normally, you know, the nine in their 3-4-3, or the first striker in a 3-5-2 if they go that way. Malik Foster is sort of a super sub, I think. But it's very strange that they're not getting a lot of goals. The strength of the team is definitely in the midfield. Rodrigo Lopez and Jack Gurr on the right wing.
Yeah. Prior to the Colorado Springs game, they had 4 straight victories. In the USL, sorry.
And a fifth against LA Galaxy in the US Open Cup.
Yeah.
They are in fairly fine form right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although, you know, what's funny is, like, if you look at who was on that Galaxy team that they beat in the US Open Cup, a number of those names you'll recognize from the normal LA Galaxy 2 roster. I mean, probably only 4 or 5, but still, you know, not an insignificant number. A lot of guys...
It's more like Galaxy 1.5.
Right. And yeah, and that run of victories were, you know, exactly the results you would expect from a team that's playing well, dominates the midfield, but can't finish. So 1-0 over San Antonio, 2-0 over Detroit, 2-0 over Galaxy 2, and 2-1 over Monterey Bay. They had to come from behind against Monterey Bay with Malik Foster putting up a brace off the bench. Exactly the kind of bullshit.
Yeah, man, they're hot right now. You know, they're finding ways to eke out wins. I mean, I was watching the Monterey game, and you know, I think I wrote the function chat like, "Oh, Sacramento's losing," and then sure enough, pretty much is what you can say there. You know, they took it to Galaxy even without, you know, all considered. I mean, that shot that the game winner was scored on was not very good. I mean, I think we can blame that on Mr. Klinsmann there. I think it hopped under his arm. You don't
As
see
American that, soccer but, fans, we'll blame whatever we can on the Klinsmann family.
Right.
So it's going to be an interesting one, but anything can happen in a rivalry game, right?
Well, experience shows that pretty much only one thing can happen in a game between Oakland and Sacramento, and it's a draw.
Big old draw.
Just one of those, okay?
What I like is that a draw is way more disappointing for Sacramento than it is for the Roots. And so it kind of feels like a victory. I don't even know any Sacramento fans to like shove that in the face of.
Well, let's just tie a bow in the Sacramento game. John, what number of goals will both teams score this weekend?
One goal.
One goal each.
No, one goal.
1-0 Oakland win. Okay.
It's going to be defensive. I feel like it's going to be a nightmare it's going to come down to the wire, and we'll see a goal after the 80th minute by Roots, sending the function going crazy. And there'll be a lot of people out there for the Roots. I've heard it's going to be over 150, so numbers are still going up.
Well, last time we traveled in those numbers, it was a good thing. So here's hoping. It will be. I think it will be defensive. And not only does Sacramento have trouble putting the ball in the back of the net, but we've already seen that they have a midfield that has the ability to sort of dominate the Roots midfield. So unlikely to see a lot of stuff going through the middle for Oakland. It's going to be difficult for Oakland to generate chances. I am very curious to see the sort of the matchups on the wings, right? I mentioned Jack Gurr going up and down the left for Sacramento, probably matched up against Juan Carlos Asocat, probably. That'll be fascinating. And then on the other side, it's either been Duke LaCroix or something Vider. They'll be matched up against Edgardo Rito, which is also going to be fascinating. That could ultimately be a stalemate on both sides, but that's probably where the game is won and lost. Peter, what are you thinking?
So I waded into the replies for the USL show on Twitter today. It's five of their preposterous six hosts predicted that Sacramento would win, and one of them predicted a draw. And I just had to get in there and point out that he's the only one who's not going to look like a clown, because obviously the Roots are going to draw Sacramento, and obviously it's going to be ugly and miserable. So 1-1, I think the Roots score late to salvage a point, but mostly to piss off Sacramento.
Hmm. I mean,
who's
the X factor?
Yes, for Roots, let's say.
It's always retail, I guess. Any other pick just seems unlikely to be true. Like, there are more interesting picks, but I don't think any of them are right.
Feels like that's going to be especially true since Dennis will miss this game, right? Dennis isn't going to be out there, and he's the other guy on the right side who is key to what the Roots do. For prediction purposes, it'd be nice to know if Janssen is going to be healthy and fit for this game. Because it was that sort of front five, Janssen, Formella, Carlson, Dennis, and Hernandez, who sort of turned the tide for Oakland in the last match. And if we're missing two of them, things don't look great. So I was I think Johnson is probably the X factor, his availability. Because if he's out there, I feel very comfortable predicting, honestly, a 2-2 draw. If he's not out there, it's going to have to be 1-1 or 0-0. I think I'm going to go with 0-0 because that's more painful for Sacramento. They're gonna have a lot of blown chances if it's a 0-0 draw. So I'll go with 0-0.
I can foresee some heartbreaking saves by Paul Blanchet in the final 5 minutes.
Yes.
I think we're unanimous, though, on the X factor. I think a Rito against Laquila, as you mentioned, that's going to be a big matchup. If he could get by him, beat their one of their best defenders, if not the best. I mean,
I sort of wonder if Sacramento puts Laquila on the back line so that they have, I think his name's Demia Villadere, have him on the wing so that there's basically two guys on Rito.
Yeah, with that, you know, Chewy's going to – it's a big game for him. He wants to make an impact. You know, he's very speedy. He's great on the counterattack. Perhaps that will come into play here and get a steal high, break it down towards the goal, and get something going. You know, he's a great passer. Him and Memo might be the two best passers on the team. That might be a – you know, who knows. But, you know, he is definitely one of the better passers.
This would be a good game for Memo to play a lot, I think, because I think Oakland's going to have the lion's share of possession. I think Sacramento's going to sit back and let us have the ball more often than not. So someone like Memo being out there would probably be really valuable. But at the same time, you like what Asokata brings on the wing as well. It's hard to say exactly who you pull off, but that's why we're not the manager.
That is not the only reason why we're not the manager.
That's pretty much it, I think. Inability to make lineup predictions in the 17th episode of our podcast.
They called us all in for interviews, and each of us individually smashed the interviews. But the last question was, who do you put in at left back in the midseason fixture against Sacramento? And we can't tell you what we said because as we didn't get the job, we know what Juan said to get the job. Sorry, I'm spiraling.
You started out well there, and then
anything else about Sacramento? I got some stats I looked into.
Oh, drop them.
These aren't as good as my book Kilo stats from early in the season, but. With his goal against Galaxy 2, Azokar is now alone the second highest goal scorer on the Roots with 5, which, speaking of Jeremy Bokila, ties Bokila's regular season goals record from last season. So Gamba's offense scores more goals. There is no, even if you take away Carlson's penalties, Gamba's offense scores more goals. Carlson leads the league in shots and shots on target, which obviously you would like a better conversion rate off of those, but that is pretty consistent with the top strikers in the league. The other people trailing him on those lists are other guys who score goals. So it's not, you know, just volume. One thing that I was sort of curious to look at is if more goals have been scored in USL or being scored in USL this season with a bunch of the developmental teams out, which I guess, now that I think about it, is kind of a double-edged sword, right? Because you're taking out those defenses as well as those offenses. In any event, the answer is basically no change at all. The average goals per game in USL last season was 2.78 goals, and the average goals per game in USL this season is 2.81. So 0.03 of a goal difference from season to season. I have not compared that to any other leagues. Possibly that's like bog standard for all soccer ever. But I don't know. And you probably don't know because I haven't looked it up and I kind of doubt you're going to.
Peter's stat segment. It's my favorite part of the show.
There it is. Amateur soccer sabermetrics. I think I'm going to, on a related note, rename my stats hour Fire Devin Kerr.
Well, look for that on upcoming episodes of Roots Pod. All right, we'll be back with you after what is sure to be an incredibly frustrating game with Sacramento Republic FC. Up the Roots.